Social Flight is brought to you by Aspen Avionics, Avidyne, Continental Aerospace Technologies, Lightspeed Aviation, Tempest Aero Group, and Whip Air. And now, here's your host, Jeff Simon.
This episode of Cockpit to Cal is made possible by Avemco Insurance. Mention Social Flight for a 5% insurance discount at avemco.com, subject to terms and conditions. Welcome to Cockpit to Cal, the show that explores general aviation safety topics from the combined perspective of flight instructors, pilots, and mechanics, exploring both pilot and aircraft topics to make aviation safer and more enjoyable. I'm Jeff Simon, pilot, AMP/IA, and president of Social Flight.
I'm Brian Schiff, airline pilot and flight instructor.
Brian, I am thrilled for this show. This is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about a topic that sounds alarmist, but incredibly important, of how to crash an airplane. And before
I've
we get
practicing.
Started. Oh, really? Good for you. Not me.
No.
Before we get started, I just want to clarify a few things for people that are joining. First of all, if you are on for the length of tonight's show, you will be receiving Wings credit. That happens automatically. It takes a few days for us to get that done, but that will happen automatically. And then in addition, this show is available directly on socialflight.com and in the Social Flight mobile apps under the FAA credits section on demand, where you can take it there and also get credit, which will go automatically to the FAA. So also, if you've missed anything from the broadcast or you want to see, Brian will have some slides, some other stuff that comes up, then you can get that directly, again, through socialflight.com and the course. And the other thing I want to do is thank Avemco for their help in preparing this as well. The entire team over there, plus the folks that we work with very closely, Marcy Veroni, Megan Thomas, and Kim Skipper, who also helped in getting some of the really good information that we have to answer your questions having to do with claims, insurance, and things all around that. And be sure, if you are either doing a renewal or a new policy with Avemco, just mention Social Flight for a 5% discount directly there with Avemco. So with that, Brian, let's get started with our concept here on how to crash an airplane. And I want to start with something kind of interesting here, which is we see a lot of people there's a fair amount written about this. And sometimes the stories that you get are individuals who have had an off airport incident and then sort of go on the, let's say, aviation talk show circuit on, you landed here and this is the way to do it. And I have to say right off the bat, you know, someone who's had one landing somewhere that worked out, I want to ask you questions rather than just go on the, I landed on a beach and it worked out fine, so here's exactly how you do it.
Yeah, and that's a one-off. Every situation is different. We couldn't possibly tell you this is the best way to do it for every situation. And I think that caveat bears warning as well, that anything we say here may not apply to your situation. Just bear in mind, all situations are unique. And so we're going to give generalities and some good advice, while it may not fit all scenarios.
That makes a lot of sense. And actually, to that end, when we talk about a subject like how to crash an airplane, I think there's two subjects that could take up all our time tonight and not get to the real topic that we'd like to get out of the way right up front. The first one is all the things you do not to have to crash an airplane, right? That is the majority of our shows here on Cockpit to Cal. And so it goes without saying that there's a million things that you need to learn, practice, and try to do in order to avoid these cases. But that's not really what we want to spend our time on this evening. And the other thing is this concept that above all else, always do whatever you need to do to protect life and limb in an accident. I mean, it should go without saying, but we really want to get that out of the way up front, so that we can start talking about the nuances and advice about what you can do in all sorts of different situations in order to best walk away, protect yourself, and to whatever degree possible, protect the aircraft.
I agree. I don't want to spend all the time on things that we've been talking about over all these other episodes and all the things that should be knowledge already, what we need to do to fly a safe airplane and not crash it, to avoid it. Avoidance is number one. It reminds me of my favorite line in The Karate Kid. You seen that movie? It's fantastic, and I'm sure most people have. But Mr. Miyagi says, as he's training his young protege, he says how to fight. He's training him. He says, fighting no good, no fight. But if must fight, win. Well, I kind of I take the same thing, and I draw a parallel to that to crashing an airplane. Crashing, not good. Don't crash. But if you must crash, survive. So let's talk about all that we've talked about, all the things. Let's just take that as a given, that all the things you can do to stack the deck in your favor to avoid it, and not make mistakes and not have things go wrong, and take the conservative route. But now we're going to talk about and get into, what if something does go wrong, something happens? How are we going to deal with putting the airplane on the ground off of an airport, or make a crash landing or a ditching? So that's what we're going to get into.
So, Brian, one of the things that I thought might be an interesting way to approach this is to break this down in a few different categories. And those categories are actually in sort of how much control and time you have on your side, how much, you know, decision-making over the situation is on your side. And I'm going to think about that in three ways. One category being that you're going to make an active decision with time on your side, with time to take the airport off landing, do an act, have an off airport landing, we could call it an accident, whatever it is. And that could be the type of thing like you're having to make a decision, you can't get through weather, or there's something going on where you're going to have to plan for this and make a decision. And then the next category is we'll call moderate, where something is now going wrong, perhaps with the engine, and you need to make a strategy. And again, you've got some time, but you less time, and you have to make a strategy. And then the most urgent one being the type of thing that we all hear, get a pit in our stomach about, which is something that just happens very fast, maybe right on climb out, and you just have to go on instinct. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think it's a great way to attack it. So we have the first one, I think, comes to mind as a precautionary landing. And we actually break that down when we brief flight attendants at the airline. We brief them. They're expecting one of two ways if we're going to make a non-scheduled landing. Is it going to be precautionary, or is it going to be emergency? If it's emergency, how much time do we have? They go to their emergency checklist, and based on the amount of time I give them, they'll decide where are they going to enter their checklist. They go up to the 10-minute part because the captain said we have 10 minutes and we're going to do everything in there, and it's prioritized like that. So I think that's a good idea. We'll talk about precautionary, and then we'll talk about, okay, we have a fixed amount of time, and then we'll talk about, okay, things are dire right now.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. And it's very interesting that it's organized in time, because that makes a lot of sense, not only for the way that we're approaching categories, but really that tells you what you can work with in the cockpit. And so if we start with the longest amount of time, we think about things that limit your options, and we're still on this topic of how to crash an aircraft. So one of the things that comes to mind for me is the idea of, let's say, weather. That if someone gets in a situation where they cannot reach an airport safely due to weather, and they are going to have to make an off airport landing, that's the kind of thing, you know, can happen, especially to VFR pilots. I can imagine if with weather closing in, that a VFR pilot has a decision to make while they're in VMC of, do I put it down somewhere that is not an airport, or do I venture into IMC conditions that, frankly, I'm not certified to be in and maybe not really trained to survive in. Tell me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so I think to you and me, the answer might be obvious. And we've also done study of accidents, and we know that inadvertent flight of a VFR flight into IMC is one of the top 10 causes of accidents. And it's a bad thing to have happen. And even instrument pilots who aren't prepared to fly IFR and stray into instrument conditions are getting into accidents. And so to me, the answer is obvious. You do not stray into bad weather. You put it down on the ground. If you see a field down there, to me, it's no question. But I think that a lot of students or pilots that maybe didn't get that kind of training, it's a tough question, because what are they going to do? Can I'm supposed to have the qualifications to get myself through the clouds in an emergency, right? Private pilots are trained on that. That doesn't mean you should go do it on purpose. It's in case it happens, you know, accidentally. I think that a pilot, and what I would tell a pilot, if you're surrounded by weather and you don't have many options, the only option is to go to bad weather, or you see a perfectly good field down there, or a highway, a big highway or something, a reasonable place to land, you'd be better off landing off airports than to get into the weather and have some kind of worse thing happen. So Yeah, the decision should be to land off airport. Now, you're right, you do have some time to do that. Depends on how fast the weather is moving in. Earlier you make the decision, the more time you have to do such a thing. And also, I kind of think of, you use the example of weather, but I think you're getting on your bonanza and you're taking off on a long cross country, your gear doesn't come up. That's another one where, okay, something went wrong, you have a lot of time. But yet, yeah, some people rush through the process and get it on the ground right away. You got enough fuel on board to fly 2, 3, 4 hours and work this out. And yet you see people rushing through it.
That makes a lot of sense. And on the VFR to IMC side of things, VMC to IMC for a VFR pilot, I think this can happen, especially if people do scud running or they do things that are ill-advised, and then they get themselves boxed in, and we've heard a lot of stories about this, and they so frequently end with a pilot getting into IMC, and we just know how that ends more times than not. It ends badly.
It does. If you're not prepared for it, it's very disorienting. Yeah, pilots get sucked into it because when they're flying towards, like scud running, you're flying towards, you know, bad or poor visibility. It looks like conditions are improving because things are coming at you and becoming more clear. Whereas if you were to look back behind you and you're flying away from that, it looks like things are getting worse because things are disappearing into the poor visibility. So you kind of get a false sense of security, like it's getting better as the things are becoming more clear as they approach you. But yeah, the decision to do that, first of all, is poor. But if there's unforecast weather, and you didn't decide to go flying in bad weather, and it's just unforecast, and that happens, that's the situation that you need to respond to and now say, okay, I need to change plans. What's the safest action for me here? And it's to probably get it on the ground.
And I want to emphasize in these cases that when you have time on your side, there's an awful lot of things you have available to you. First of all, time on your side means the engine you're not on a ticking time clock where things are just about to end. You're not just about to have fuel end or an engine running end or something like that going on. That means you have time to survey an area, to find a decent landing zone, which could be in a field, as you mentioned, but it could be on a road, on a highway, where instead of the classic show up on the news thing where someone has one shot and has to worry about traffic or has to worry about other things, you actually have time to survey and then decide, all right, it's completely empty, it looks right, I've gone and made one pass, there's no towers, there's no power lines, I've done what I need to do, this looks like this is going to work out. Why not in that case, compared to putting yourself into a position where you are really have a chance of total spatial disorientation and just, you know, frankly, spinning into the ground or something like that. And I want to point out that when I was speaking with Kim Skipper over at Avemco, she emphasized that in some of those cases, or in cases like that, where you're able to land, everyone's going to be okay. The insurance company, they'll step up to the plate often. I know that, you know, Avemco said in that example they would, and take care of getting the aircraft transported, broken down and transported back to the airport. You could literally wind up okay. You did your best. It wasn't a fail, hopefully a dramatic failure of judgment, but it happens. You got it there. You're okay. The aircraft's okay. And you've even got your insurance company helping you move the aircraft and get things put back to a regular airport. I think that's an incredibly good outcome, not to be too scared of.
Yeah, it's a valuable piece of knowledge to know that they've got your back if you have to do this, because a lot of people hesitate to do the right thing because they fear repercussion. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen? Is the insurance company can do this? How much is it going to cost to move the airplane if I can't take off out of here? What if I break the airplane? Whatever, am I going to be criticized by the FAA? Yeah. All these things. You said it very poignantly at the beginning of this episode. The priority is on saving life and limb. Going into IMC or unknown weather is not the way to do that. And getting, disoriented in the clouds, or there have been way too many accidents that prove that happens. Whereas you're looking at a field, and you said survey one pass at a moderate altitude is good. I would take a second one down low. Some flight operations that, land on icy runways will sometimes have to, like a non-towered airport, their policy is to do a fly down the runway or a few feet over the runway to inspect it for, you never know, it could look like flat snow, but you get down low, it could look like berms and ruts. Same thing. Absolutely. With dirt and
absolutely
fields.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got time for it. I think one of the important things to point out here is that whether it's going to be the FAA or your insurance company, you mentioned repercussions are what get in our way as pilots from sometimes just making the right decision at the time. And so in order to not focus on that too much, it's important to understand that I think there's really two things that both the FAA and even your insurance company are going to be looking at. One is what got you into that situation. That's going to matter to them. What kind of pilot are you that got in there? That's fine. That's it. But what it is what it is at that point. The second, because you're there. But the second part of it is, what decision did you then make? Did you make a smart decision from that point? Because you, at any moment, have this chance to restart. And that chance to restart is just from the moment you're thinking. And that moment you're now thinking clearly is like, it doesn't matter what got you here. That's done. And someone will look at it. But at this point, are you making the best decision possible? And if the answer is, yeah, I shouldn't have flown that day, or I shouldn't have done whatever. But in this situation, I looked at it and said, getting an IMC, I thought was the worst decision, was a much riskier decision, or whichever case comes after this, rushing things after my landing gear wouldn't come down, or trying to get into the nearest airport when I knew that I had time on my side. And so I flew for another 30 minutes to get to a big airport with assistance and ground personnel or whatever it takes. This is your restart. This is your chance to show people what your thinking was.
Yeah, that's a good point. And not worrying about repercussions and knowing what you're going to do and making that decision is kind of a mindset you have to have. And the mindset is you have to have forethought. If things go wrong, like talking about it now, watching this program and having us tell you, giving it thought at this point in time is what will prepare you for if you get into that situation later. That's why it's so great for pilots to discuss these things ahead of time, to discuss it with an instructor. I had an instructor once tell me, is this a one sip of coffee problem or is this a three sip of coffee problem?
I like that.
How much time am I going to take to react? Don't rush. Don't be reactive. And one thing real quick, I know you're going to say something, but proactively making a precautionary landing, you're under control. You have options. You have choices. You have time. If you wait for things to get dire and desperate, now your hand may be forced. And when your hand is forced, that's when stressful things happen. And that's when pilots will screw up more.
Yeah. One of the interesting things that there's been examples of in the past, and you mentioned something like gear won't come down. Obviously, you have checklists for it. You have things like that. But if you've got 3 hours of fuel on board, everything's fine. And why not, if all else fails, why not put yourself into a safe situation, get within cell phone range, and see if you can reach a mechanic, talk to someone, talk to whatever. If everything's on your side, then use it. Use the time. The worst thing that's going to happen is the best thing, which is you're going to give people more time to help you. You're going to have less fuel on board the aircraft, etc.
Right. Evaluate how much time you have and take advantage of all the time you have. Time is your friend. Don't dilly-dally. Don't put yourself into a situation. Don't procrastinate a decision when the weather's happening. But like you said, when you have time to do something, don't hurry up and get it on the ground if you're on a clear, beautiful VFR day and the only problem is your gear didn't come up. Yeah, fly around for a while. Figure it out. Give CNN time to get you on the news. Get,
well, you mentioned gear coming up, and that's an interesting thing as well, right? Because we've talked about what happens if gear doesn't come down, but if gear doesn't come up, you want to, again, go through your checklist, do things like that. But right. Think about how much assistance you have from like a towered airport that may not have been part of your where you departed from or where your destination was, but they would be, I know that they're equipped with binoculars, experience, and would be thrilled to have you do flybys for them to do their best, at least, to let you know if the gear looks like it's down.
They will want to help you. They will want to reach out and use the resources that they have. And invariably, if there's a flight school in the field, towers know they can call them and ask for a flight instructor. Someone can get a book out. A mechanic can help you. Oh, check this circuit breaker or whatever. You just never know what kind of help can come your way if you take the time to ask for it when you need it. I know air traffic control will bend over backwards. They are always willing to help. All you have to do is ask. Pilots generally are afraid to ask for that.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's one other thing that also comes to mind and came up from the discussions that I've had with folks over at Avemco, and that is understanding how they look at these types of different off airport or other incidents that come up. And it was really interesting, and this was one that came up in my discussion today with Kim Skipper, and it was that in a situation, let's say, that someone does an inadvertent gear up landing, the reality for them is this happens. And someone who is just honest, doesn't lie about the gear didn't come down, doesn't play games, they're going to find out, they're going to put it on jacks, they're going to cycle the gear. Someone who doesn't play any games, I mean, I've seen that. I've seen people kind of, you know, that the gear lever right after I landed that way, all I have to do is flip it this way. Now, you know, be honest. And the reality is, I said, what generally happens to one of your customers that has a claim for a gear up landing? And they said, well, they'll lose their claim-free discount, but other than that, that's about it.
Yeah.
They said, what really does matter, though, is we look at things like other incidents, like fuel exhaustion. We look at that very differently because that has to do with planning and what your mentality is and what kind of pilot you are strategically that kind of got you into that situation. And so it seems like, you know, we're almost, I'm not speaking for them, but from the conversation, it really seemed to me like the person that has a claim and a bunch of money that has to be paid to fix an airplane because they forgot to put the lever down and, you know, 1,200 hours of flying safely, they're less of a concern than the person who lands the airplane on a highway and everything's fine, but turns out they didn't plan fuel and they just completely ran out.
Yeah, I think that the blatant poor planning is inexcusable, running out of fuel when, you know, you chose that, and poor planning, that's not going to be looked at too favorably. And no one's going to question you if something went wrong. And if you lie, it's going to get caught. If you try to cover up, oh, I the gear wouldn't come down, so I landed right away as fast as I can on a normal schedule without going around and checking it out. No, I think that you're going to get caught every time that happens. And it reminds me of the time I got a ticket for not stopping at the coming out of a driveway and turning onto a street. And a cop pulls me over and I said, she says, you didn't stop. I said, okay. All right. She gives me a ticket, but I go to court and I'm going to fight this because I know I stopped. And this is, you know, how could she have known? She's so far away. Well, out comes the videotape, the recording from her squad car of me just blaring out the driveway and making I got nothing. You know, I don't know what to say. They got me. There's video. So that's the other thing, is you're always being recorded. ATC audio is being recorded. There are cameras everywhere. You know, you've got to live your life like everything you do is being recorded. Don't lie about it. And so when you talk about that and being treated favorably by Avemco, when you tell them what happened, remember, they are not judge and jury. They are your friend. They are your advocate. And so don't lie to them. Tell them what happened. Be honest about it and what you've learned from it. Nobody's perfect.
Yeah. So Brian, as long as we're in this category where you've got some time to think more than normally, let's talk about some of the decisions that you can make strategically during this. And I think the first thing that comes to mind is, do you have a checklist for this type of a landing? And what kind of things are on it? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's when something happens, like if you're going to have to be forced to ditch, but you've got all the time in the world before you do it, or this or that goes wrong. And the first thing that happens is you stress out. You're not quite sure, is there a procedure for this? Of course, we don't know. We don't memorize all the procedures. I recommend people, if not even reading one emergency procedure before every flight, at least go and look at the title of one emergency procedure. You'll get through all of them. Read through just the titles every now and then so you know which ones there are. You'll be amazed how quick you'll recall the fact that, oh, I saw a procedure for that. I know what happens when this needle's that way and this green light is on, but this red one's orange. There's a procedure. I saw it. So you go to it and you want to do it. If you have time, do the procedures. They're written for a reason. If it matches your scenario, bearing in mind, not all procedures apply to every scenario. There are it's possible to have scenarios that there is no procedure for. And for that, you've got to do your best. So to be prepared for that, the best thing you can do is review the emergency procedures in the airplane you fly, so you're familiar with what's in there. Don't memorize them in this scenario where you've got procedures that take a long time, a scenario where you have time. Be prepared for, I lost train of thought. I know the first thing was to know the emergency procedures, talk about them and review them with instructors, and consider all the time that you have. But being familiar with what's in the book, you'll know what's there to go for it. But also knowing your aircraft systems is the second thing, because there may be something you can do that there is no procedure for, and knowing the aircraft system might save your butt because you're familiar with it. And lastly, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, what I think is really important, we have checklists and we have things that you can go through, and your aircraft POH, and if you have separate checklists, should have each scenario and what you do in each of those. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to have right on your kneeboard, or right available to you in whichever way is easily available, a ditching checklist, a category checklist that literally says the aircraft's going down. These are the bullet points, so I don't miss something.
Right.
That you can go down and figure out how you want to configure it, how you want to take care of people on board, how you want to brief people on board, blah, 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 in a short list that you just pull out in that situation so you don't miss something.
Yeah, there are certain procedures where when you don't have a lot of time, you want to either have the immediate action items memorized or have easy access to them. Like you said, have it on your kneeboard, have a ditching checklist. Be familiar with your aircraft if it has a ditching checklist. The 172 and the 172RG have a ditching checklist.
Yeah.
A lot of thought went into those and the procedures that go into them. So when you think, oh gosh, what should I do? Should I open the door or not? Should I put the gear down or not? It's driven by the checklist. The manufacturer has given it way more thought than you ever could imagine. So being familiar with that ahead of time is going to help you go through the procedure and know that it's there and handle the situation at the time.
So Brian, let's talk about what items should be in lieu of a POH ditching checklist that you've got. Let's talk about what we would put on a ditching checklist here. And I think it starts with that understanding very quickly of what type of landing are you now headed for, because everything follows that. And
right. And so in this scenario, we're going for water.
It is. well, is it? Are we going for water? Are we going for, you know, seriously, what were the conditions that you're going to landing? Because that's going to change not only what your actions are further down the checklist, but it's going to change how you brief people on board and what you then do. So,
yeah, certainly.
So what are those first things that you think of? We certainly know, you know, first one is we're likely to have what I'll call a semi-normal landing, right? You're off airport, but you believe that the conditions exist to land the airplane on its gear. I think that's one type of a landing that you may be faced with. Another one would be off airport, harsh terrain. Another one might be water.
Right.
What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, you want to prepare for, even if you're going to land off airport, you've surveyed the area, it looks good. You want to be prepared for something to go wrong. If it's a precautionary landing off the airport, you want to be prepared for the gear to collapse, something could go wrong. So you want to prepare in advance for anything like that to happen. And we've heard the things like, you know, open the door, crack the door open before you touch down because the airplane might hit hard or, you know, turn or get bent or warp and you can't get the door open. I would add one more step to that. That's when you open the door, latch it open if you have a latch to prevent it from relatching closed after you let it go, because that could happen. Where people are in the airplane. If you have passengers, I think it's important to not only brief them, but also don't fall prey to, if they're panicking, don't buy into that. You know, if they're panicking and upset, be the pilot in command and don't buy into what they're panicking, because they're going to follow your lead. If you stay calm and brief them and explain something to them in a calm manner, they will follow your lead. So give them a briefing, stay calm, tell them what to expect and what they need to do to best survive. So if you're going to make an off-airport landing precautionary, consider where should everybody be seated if there are extra seats in the airplane. For example, you fly a Bonanza. It's got club seating in the back. If you had four passengers, think about where you would want the rear seat passengers facing forward.
Facing aft so that in an impact, they're going back into it with a headrest.
Exactly.
Seems like the safest situation. And right. They don't see what's coming. No.
Yeah, they're just looking at where they've been. Exactly. So giving consideration to that. Also, think about what's in the cabin. So I'm thinking of all the things we do at the airline. If we're going to make a precautionary landing or an off airport, we actually do train and prepare for emergency landings, which could be a crash landing. We have a briefing for the passengers, one of which is to brace before landing. So make sure they brace before landing, have a position that, you know, maybe going to be the safest. If there are sharp objects or things that could fly around the cockpit, if you hit bumps or if you skip or bounce or you're experiencing some kind of upset from something you hit, what's going to bounce around and hurt somebody? So you want to stow everything except the soft things. If you have jackets and blankets and pillows, might be really good to cover the sharp things or the panel before you hit, or the yoke even, with a soft thing like a jacket or a pillow just before impact, things like that. You want to kind of consider everything in the airplane and where it should be.
Yeah, coats, jackets, anything that you have that can be soft is your friend in an accident. People should be using it to minimize the amount of motion if they go forward, to use it, as you mentioned, to protect themselves against hard objects and places that they might get thrown, and protect yourself as a pilot as well once you're committed to making that happen. So I think those are all really, really good things. And I like what you mentioned about making sure, I want to reemphasize that anything that you open and can latch in the open position, as if it's closed. So that means, you know, you extend it and then you turn the latch in a way that extends the bolt that latches it. Latch it in the open position so it stays that way. That's really important. And again, these depend on what type of situation that you've decided you've briefed that you're going to be able to land. And then the next has to do with the decisions you're going to make. We've talked a fair amount about retractable gear aircraft. You know, one of the biggest questions people have is landing gear up or gear down. And there's been a fair amount written about this. And I think for me and the experiences that I've seen and the education that I've had on it, that I've seen more benefit than not to landing gear up unless you see a situation where you are likely to remain on the gear, meaning if it looks like you're coming into a situation where, sure, you might damage something, but at the end of the day, the aircraft is likely to be able to stay on that gear, well, then have the gear down. Yeah. But if not, whether that be water, trees, or very, very rough field conditions, something like that, if not, then more often than not, I believe that you're really protecting the people and, well, to some degree, the machine itself, by keeping everything stowed. Let yourself, I've seen, unfortunately, a fair number of gear up landings, and they are remarkably uneventful. And while that would be different in a field or in water, I really think that it's what you really want to avoid as much as possible is the chance that you're going to turn an upside normal landing of some kind into either a spinning, a tumbling, or some other type of landing.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, you have landing gear that's fairly stout. A Mooney's landing gear is fairly stout. It's probably going to topple the airplane before it breaks off. Where if you imagine, a retractable Cessna with those, swinging, something like that might break off and absorb some of the energy of a crash. It depends on where you're going to land. If you're ditching, again, follow the ditching procedure in your POH. Like I said, the Cessna one tells you to land, to ditch gear up if you have a retractable. If you don't have a retractable gear, obviously, I suggest you land with it down.
Well, you don't have much option in that case.
I was wondering if you had a guess.
Again, this is as much opinion as it is education. But I will say
every scenario is different.
In those cases where you're really saying that that you're gonna be able to shear off the gear without dramatically changing the trajectory of the aircraft, honestly, I don't know how much you're really gonna gain in terms of energy dissipation. So I'm so much more concerned over changing the trajectory of the aircraft. When I look at unfortunately accidents of people that I've known and things like that, far more damage comes from not staying aligned with what you've decided is your safe route for your landing zone, or winding up in an unusual attitude on the ground where you could get trapped, or in the water where it's hard to escape. Those things are so much more concerning to me than that small amount of dissipation, that I really do encourage people to consider, unless, again, you expect that you have a chance at remaining on that gear, leave it stowed.
I agree with that. And generally speaking, if you're ditching, most of the time gear up is going to be a better way to go. If you imagine a seaplane and picture what the bottom of the pontoons look like, you might even see an amphibian that has wheels that come down. You land those with the gear up. The smooth surface, the planning, picture bottom of a boat. You don't see big things sticking out like landing gear. It's going to be a smoother, and you can kind of skim the top of the water easier with the gear up. It really depends on the airplane as well.
And I'll offer this because it's kind of a double win, right? On one side of it, I look at it and say, well, it's a win because I think it's the safest thing for the occupants on board to remain gear up. But and in some cases, flaps up. It depends. But at the same time, since so many pilots get, we try to talk them out of worrying about the plane, but they still get worried about the plane. I want to set people's mind at ease that when aircraft are designed, they are designed with the idea of a gear up landing happening at the design stage. They just are. I mean, that's how engineers look at it. And because of that, you'd be surprised at how reasonable a gear up landing repair of your plane can be compared to ripping everything apart and all the things that go along with it. So this is a case where the two align, and that's what matters, the safety of yourself and the preservation of your aircraft.
Yeah, I agree in that priority, in that order. And for self-preservation, you want to prepare yourself as well. It's not everybody knows you're going to fasten your seatbelt, but you also want to do for yourself and your passengers, make sure they cinch it tight. You don't want to have a lot of play and a lot of movement in that as well, because you're going to be moving more. You don't want yourself to be allowed to move as much, and you might survive an accident more, but get these bruises, but for flying a foot forward before your solar harness catches you. So cinch it up, cinch your seatbelt tight. You want to cover the items in the cockpit. You want to look at a place to land that's one into the wind, because you want to crash as slowly as possible, the slowest ground speed possible. And of course, you want to have wings level. If you can land under control most of the time, you're much better off as slow as you can with your wings level, under control, and you're likely going to survive that accident.
Yeah. I'd like to, when you talk about under control, there's something I'd really like to point out. There's been an awful lot of study done in the field of surviving accidents in both cars and aircraft and deceleration of the human body. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that stands out in all of this research, but may not be obvious to everyone, is that forward deceleration of your body. Your body's built for that. That's what, if you think of yourself as lying on the ground and you say, great, now I'm going to place a bunch of weights on top of your chest. And I don't mean like built for an extreme. I'm saying for some form of it. Like, this is where you can withstand it. This is where your body can handle things. Where it can't handle it and where you are most fragile is in vertical deceleration. The idea of dropping, going this way down. And because of that, we think all about what do we have to do in order to dissipate this energy in this horizontal fashion, as you were talking about, like, what can I do if I stay under control to reduce, to lengthen the amount of time that I have for the aircraft to decelerate? And all of that's going to do great stuff for me. But one of the mistakes that happens in some accidents, and I have personally lost a friend to this, is that people are so concerned with that, that they make a mistake and they stall the aircraft in. And when you stall in from a low altitude, you think you're trying to get as slow as you can and you drop it from 20 feet or 25 feet that we don't think of as being as bad as the idea that I'm going forward at 50 miles an hour or 40. The problem is we're not built to survive that. And it's the idea, just like falling off of a ladder, that you'd be surprised that at a relatively low drop, if you're just dropping straight down, that's often not survivable. And so, as you mentioned, I just want to emphasize remaining in control and keeping the aircraft flying until you're making ground contact is so much more important than that extra 5 knots.
Yeah, totally agree. It's better to put it down under control than to try and bleed off a little bit more speed, then stall it and fall. Good point about how humans are created, and you can handle a lot of forward deceleration, but you want to try to absorb the energy as much as you can. You want to crash into something soft rather than hard. Just picture going into a big wheat field versus going into a bunch of boulders. That's a very extreme example of what we're talking about, but the airplane flying handbook even tells you in a crash landing, look for soft objects, something that's going to absorb the energy. You want as little energy as possible to need to be absorbed. So I have, I'm gonna try and share my screen here, an illustration that kind of shows this. There it is. If you go into a 20 knot headwind and you have a 60 knots glide or whatever, you're going to be 40 knots over the ground and you're going to hit and collide at something at 40 knots. If you land the wrong way, like with a tailwind, then now you've added 20 knots to that 60 knots. You're going to hit at 80 knots. That's twice the 40, obviously, and it's four times the energy that needs to be dissipated. So if you have twice the speed, ground speed, when you collide, that's four times the energy that needs to be dissipated. It's a lot less likely to be able to do that in the distance required so that you don't have as many G's absorbing that energy. So be as slow as you can. And the whole moral of this is be into the wind. The lesson behind that, know where the wind is at all times. I fly with people. If I'm given a flight review, ask the pilot I'm flying with, all right, we're up here cruising along, going to this destination. Where are the winds right now? And they're like, then they start looking. I'm like, nope, you should have known already. As you're flying along, notice the tractor that's going along and which way the dust is moving. Notice the smoke coming out of the smokestack and which way it's going. Your briefing, you knew where the winds were. It's not that hard to kind of always know which way the surface winds are going. And then once you know that, play that game, what if, where am I going now? And I play a game of leapfrog when I'm going from A to B. This is my point now. I even do this in the airliner. My co-pilots sometimes laugh at me, but I know at any instant what airport I'm going to and which one is closest. And it might be the one behind me, but you're kind of like Tarzan going from, and I think Jason Miller used that. I don't want to steal it without giving him credit, but going from vine to vine. Okay, now we're going to make this airport. But knowing the winds helps you know not only which one is shorter in point of time, but also if you have to crash land, what direction am I going to crash land in?
Yeah. Yeah. That makes an awful lot of sense. And, you know, you also mentioned something to me in the past that I've learned from you, which is how strategic and how narrow to make that where you're going to make that soft landing spot for you in the cockpit. The idea that it's, if you're in a wooded area, get between the two trees. If you're in a, if you have to be in a, in an area filled with buildings or something like that, literally go for the paint, go for the big glass window, like whatever it is, if there's a way to put yourself into the softest area, do it.
Right. It doesn't take much. Just the, you know, size of your fuselage, the wings will shear off at most speeds, and that will dissipate a lot of energy. But when they shear, the fuselage will continue forward and not create so many G's that you can't survive. So yeah, picture if you're going to hit a building, do you want to hit the brick wall or do you want to hit a window? I mean, it sounds morbid. It sounds like a bad thing to think about, but thinking about it ahead of time is going to help you be prepared to actually do it when it really happens, when you're under the gun.
Yeah. So Brian, let's talk. We've talked about when you have a lot of planning available to you, and then we've covered some of the categories when you have maybe a little less planning and time. What are the things that you do to figure out, you know, let's go to the medium category, right? When you've got, you don't have as much time on your hands, but you've got to make some decisions here. What are the things that come to mind for you where you've got to act fairly quickly, but maybe it's not just your on departure engine loss kind of thing?
Yeah. So I think being familiar with your systems and your checklist, obviously that applies to both of scenarios, but it's going to save you some time. When you have a medium amount of time, a fixed amount of time, but not an immediate action, you need to be in the mindset of, okay, I need to handle this issue and I need to, I really think mindset is a big part of it. And I would encourage you to go back and watch the last shift show where I had Tammy Barlett on, and she is actually teaching this kind of stuff of having the mindset to do this and how to be prepared for that. But you need to kind of picture it happening. You need to also allow yourself, and this is kind of a funny thing, I'm going to back up to the pre-flight, but it's a state of mind. I brief my first officers, hey, if something goes terribly wrong right away and we have to deal with it, first we're going to, you know, scream like 5-year-old children, and then we're going to bring it back in and handle it and take care of it like adults. Mm-hmm. And she actually loved that. She says what that does is you're allowing yourself the okay to react to it, do what you got to do, but what you've done is you've precursed yourself to get right out of it and get back into the frame of game, bring yourself back to reality, get on task after you've immediately had your initial reaction to it. So scream, but yeah, bring it back in like an adult. So be ready for it and start dealing with it and prioritize. There may be a lot of things that you'll worry about. You may not have time to tell ATC what you're doing. Communication is on the bottom of the Aviate, Communicate, Navigate list. Aviate, Navigate, Communicate. It's on the bottom of that list for a reason.
Now it is.
Yeah, now it is. So prioritize. There are things that matter. Look at the things that matter and do them first. I think that's the most important thing.
I think one of the things that I'd like to point out about those scenarios is that it's more important to get yourself down with whatever control you have left than to stretch it and lose that control. And one of the examples of that is a failing engine or some other failing system on the aircraft that you absolutely need. If we look at something like oil pressure loss, for example, or massive oil loss that all of a sudden, you've got a finite amount of time that you have power of some level from that engine. And the first thing that I recommend in that case is to reduce power as much as possible, because it's the amount of time you have from that engine is directly related to the torque that you are putting on that engine, the amount of pressure that the bearings are experiencing where that hydroscopic film that exists from the oil prevents that metal-to-metal contact. What little you have left there is affected by how hard you're pushing that engine. And so it's better to pull it back and immediately try to get yourself down. Instead of stretching for that airport or trying to see if you're going to make it to that airport, because I would rather see someone putting an aircraft down in a field and having some more pulses of power to put in at the very end to get you over that fence you didn't see, mm-hmm. or get you over that hill, or avoid that car that you didn't know was going to pull on the road, than to try to stretch it to that airport you may get fixated on, have it stop, and now you no longer have that last bit of control. I just like you to have control in those last minutes.
Yeah, and that's the advice that I should have led with the medium time emergency, is don't stop flying the airplane to handle the problem as well. You need to divide your attention if you're the only pilot on board. If you have another pilot, divvy up the tasks by all means. Say, hey, if you have another private pilot that can easily fly your airplane, maybe you let them fly it and just say, hey, hold straight and level. I'm going to get in the book here and start dealing with this, or start heading toward this point while I start dealing with the problem, and dole out tasks like that. Utilize all your resources. That's an important thing as well. So, but continue to fly the airplane. Somebody, if you're the only pilot, you've got to keep doing it, got to keep flying the airplane. Don't let whatever the distraction is take you away from that primary task.
You know, someone asked a question having to do with, you know, gaining altitude versus, you know, using the time to gain altitude versus, you know, using the time to go in. And to that, I really look at it and I say, again, it depends on what the situation actually is. If your situation is that it is unquestionable that you're done, that this engine will be stopping, mm-hmm. then I would still rather you commit to a landing and have as much control and choice as possible up until the very end, than you climb to give yourself time, but you convert that aircraft to a glider where you have no options in those last few minutes.
Right, and that's what we're talking about, converting a precautionary landing into a forced landing. That's trying to keep it precautionary and have some kind of control for as long as we can before we lose the engine. And you taught me a valuable lesson that, hey, if I have a low oil pressure and high oil temperature, maybe I even see some leaking out, I pull that thing back to idle, I've just drastically increased the amount of time I might be able to get a burst of power out of that engine if my off-airport landing, for example, comes in too low and I need a little burst of power. But if I keep running it at full speed, trying to get to my destination, and then I lose it, now it's a forced situation and you have no choices and you can't screw up.
Yeah, I think, you know, it may be anecdotal, but when we really look at different accidents that have happened, it's hard for me to read. I lost a close friend last year a couple years ago now to that you read these stories that say, you know, this aircraft had to come in to land, and then there's always this, and then at the last minute, this thing happened.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what either a car pulls out or a condition was seen, or you couldn't get over something. That's what really drives that idea of, like, give yourself that option rather than an option on a larger scale of just having a wider net or a chance at getting somewhere.
Right. No, it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. I want to reserve time for getting to the immediate action ones too. So
yeah. So let's talk about that. So now we've other people, right, that we both have lost, Richard McSpadden among them, and others that have had these accidents where you just don't have this time. You have to make immediate decisions. And without getting into our whole big turn back to the airport thing that everyone's beaten, tell me what your thoughts are on that. What is the deal with taking off and really things you don't have time to think about?
Well, there's a very specific way to deal with that the airlines actually teach us, and it totally applies to general aviation. Before I tell you that, I want to basically go back. I found in the Cessna manual where it says, you know, low oil pressure. If it says if a total loss of oil pressure is accompanied by a rise in temperature, there's a good reason to suspect an engine failure is imminent. Reduce engine power immediately and select a suitable forced landing field. Use only the minimum power required to reach the desired touchdown spot. And that procedure is going to do, like you said, preserve the power, preserve the engine for when you really need it. But that's really something you got to get the airplane on the ground. As far as immediate action items, when you have an emergency that requires immediate action, you don't have time to go look that up at the time. Like one of the things that I've heard Dad grill into people, and he's grilled it into me, you have an engine fire right now. What's the first thing you're going to do? And if you don't know how to answer that without getting a book out, you're going to turn into, it's going to be catastrophic before you get the book out and finally find it and see what the thing is. Oh yeah, I need to pull the mixture back. And I think a lot of us can use common sense, you know, mixture, shut the fuel off, power back, the main fuel shut off, all those things. But you should know the immediate action items. There are certain things like that. I would encourage you to go through your POH, find them, know the immediate action items. So at airlines or even, you know, corporate pilots, people who fly professional and are required to provide a higher degree of care for people, for their passengers, are required to have memory items. Most of them. There are certain situations where you don't, but that is one of them. What is the immediate action item? Now, we do one sort of in general aviation. If your engine quits after takeoff, go straight ahead. Yeah, that's good advice. Go straight ahead. Don't try and make turns. This, the idea is we want to crash land as slow as we can with our wings level, under control. And I'm not talking about a turn back. I'm talking about an immediate thing. Another such thing that we do is, and this is to battle the startle effect, because what happens is when something like that happens that we're going to have to react to immediately, we get startled usually. And there's a, oh gosh, what do you do? And now you've got to try to decide. Try to think about such scenarios ahead of time and decide ahead of time what you would do. The example of that is a procedure we use in every jet is V1. This is a takeoff decision speed. This decision cannot be made at that time. So it's made ahead of time. If I reach this speed and the engine fails, I'm going. If the engine fails before that, we're stopping. We know that right away. So I'm kind of going down the runway going, I'm stopping. I hear the co-pilot say V1, I'm going. So that kind of thing can also be done. You need to think of these things ahead of time.
Yeah.
That's how you prevent the startle factor. That's how you prevent making the wrong move or not knowing what to do. So You can't cover every scenario, but the best thing to do is think about, okay, come up with examples. What is it that could happen? Give it some thought and talk about it with an instructor.
Yeah. And I think one of the important parts about that is briefing and really having that decision about what is at the end of this runway, where does it go? I think We have the tools on our cell phone, even if you don't have it on your electronic flight bag, that you can easily just look at a satellite view. Even if it's your home airport, you should really know it. But you should know at that point, like, I'm going to make a 30-degree turn to the left because that puts me on this golf course or this field where I'm going straight ahead, but it's all trees. And if it's trees and that's what it is, I'm going to try to get as slow as I can and hit the top of the trees and dissipate as much energy as I can, because that's all I've got.
Yeah.
Or, hey, there's a field or whatever it is. There's no reason not to look and see what's there on a, when I say look, on a map, not like from the runway and be surprised for the first time when you climb out.
Right. No, I'm looking at that. And if I'm, every time I do a takeoff, I'm looking as I'm climbing out there, right? There's good that, oh, nope, there. Now I like that. I'm always doing that as I climb out. There are people who just get in and drive. They don't look out. They don't think, what if? Those are the ones that are going to fall prey to the startle effect. You want to be thinking, okay, when the engine quits, I'm going to do this. And you plan on it. And then if it doesn't quit, you're like, oh, I can't do it now because it didn't quit. It's like when you fly an approach, you want to be ready for a go around. A go around can startle you. There are many accidents and loss of control accidents that resulted from a go around. So you want to be ready. You want to know the procedures. You want to practice it. And you need to know it ahead of time. Okay, I'm going to plan on going around and here's how I'm going to do it. Unless everything works out perfectly and I have to land.
That's probably one of the biggest things that you have taught me as a friend and a mentor and a flight instructor, is the idea that you plan for the problem. You plan for not the kit, you know, bulk, you know, takeoff. You plan for all those things, not for the success. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, exactly. I want to throw, I know we're running out of time, so I wanted to just throw up real quickly that even afterwards, you want to survive. You could survive the crash landing and then not have the equipment or the ability to survive for a couple of days while someone's looking for you. So I just want to say real quick that I do have a list of survival gear. I'm not going to go over it all right now, but I just want to show you, I have a spinning wheel in front of me. This is the stuff you want to have. I learned from my Alaska friends what you should have on board. You can go back, watch this again and pause it and read it. But I do have a shopping list for an Amazon shopping list for all of these things and more that I think you should have on your airplane. And you should put them inside a Pelican case that can float, some kind of waterproof case is what I really like. One that can be easily found, kind of like this. Again, this is the shopping list. You can get it. Well, I'll keep this in my follow-up emails for the Shift Show and on my website, this shopping list, in case you don't get it here. But it's a list that I share for survival gear, what you should have on the airplane. And if something happens, don't spend a lot of time in denial. Okay. Admit to it, acknowledge it, and then deal with it.
Yeah. I think that's great. Excellent advice. And again, the recording of the show will be available on socialflight.com and the Social Flight mobile apps where you can watch it again. There'll be obviously credits available, but you can get straight to that slide and see Brian's Amazon shopping list that I think if you buy something on there, you do that. You also get a gift for his wife. There's all sorts of cool stuff that'll go on.
So. Yeah, right. Yeah, there's also a NAFI Mentor Live that's free for anybody to watch that I did on how to crash an airplane with a lot more detail of what we're talking about here. So if you go to the NAFI website and search for the Mentor Live archives and look for how to crash an airplane, you'll see what I talked about here, but in greater detail.
But not as much fun. I'm just going to say.
Not nearly as much fun because I'm not with my good friend Jeff.
Well, Brian, we've made it to the end of another Cockpit to Cowl show. And crazy. I love doing these with you. I appreciate everyone who joined us this evening for the show. We'll be back next Tuesday. I'll be here on Social Flight Live. That's socialflightlive.com, one word. Just go register for that show at socialflightlive.com. We're going to have Captain Jenny Beatty on the show, who's got all sorts of fascinating history things, really interesting stuff having to do with obscure history of women flying and pilots. And she's even got a story of the origins of the Mile High Club. Yes, there's actually an origin story for this. So without going and getting too far off track, check that out at socialflightlive.com. And then we're back here on Cockpit to Cowl on February 10th. And we're going to be talking about winter flying and winter adventures. We're still in February. It's still going to be cold and snowy and icy. And I know Alton Bay.
Well, speak for yourself.
Down here in the southern states. You don't know that. Dallas has gotten that way sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. Right now it's been beautiful. We've had, I think it was 85 on Christmas.
Yeah. I don't want to know. I don't want to know. But yes, so winter flying, winter adventures. And if you're anywhere up in New England, Alton Bay, the ice runway will be opening up shortly. They hope within the next week here. And that'll play in to our show as well on February 10th. So with that, again, thank you so much for me and for Social Flight. I really appreciate it all. And Brian, thank you so much for another fantastic show. And I wish all of you blue skies.
Good night, everyone.